the opinions or behaviors of others or whatever else is outside ourselves. The Stoic thus considers money, fame, misfortunes, and the like to be externals and regards them with detachment.
Okay, Colin here, and we're going to get right into it. Short show because everything's in disarray. And let's do the sharing of the screen. I got something from a book I was reading recently that I want to talk about. And so, Armando, you can see this? Let me know.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is The Practicing Stoic. This is a William Irving, I think is his name. And he wrote The Guide to a Good Life. It's another one of the top Stoic books. But I've been in Stoicism for a long time now. And it's funny because all the crazy stuff lately with my house flooding and us being homeless and like bouncing around from Airbnb to Airbnb and like, you know, sleep is hectic. My son's kind of like as a toddler, he doesn't know what's going on. So he's been having some fits, you know, trying to get through it. Poor guy. Mm-hmm. And but like I haven't really felt, in fact, I haven't once felt bad for myself. That's very important. I've never once been like, why'd this happen to me? Like the thoughts didn't even enter my consciousness. Right now, this is years of, you know, entrepreneurship, which tends to forge you into somebody that has to eat shit all the time, right? So like, I'm not, it's never a judgment when I compare myself to someone else or they might compare themselves to me based on something I said. So like 15 years I've been working to get to this point. It's not like I just woke up and I'm like good at responding to life. And I still like will get mad if somebody cuts me off in traffic. Like I'm not perfect with this stuff at all, right? So one of the most important things that I noticed though was that I didn't feel like I was a victim in any way, like didn't even enter my consciousness. But then two, I was kind of excited about all of it. I'm like, it's change, there's turmoil, but I've always found that when things change and I can't change it. So for example, a house floods, you can't live there, you have to move. There's no discussion about what we should do. We just have to find a place to live, right? Mm-hmm. When I can get to that clarity and I focus on that, it actually brings me a certain level of solace in my mind where I just know that this is the problem. I know what the solution is and I just work on the solution. And it brings me a kind of equanimity of mind where I can just focus on that and I can remove all the other emotions, you know, if that makes sense, right? Yeah, a lot totally. Of times when we're just like unsure what to do, that anxiety of not really knowing and not even knowing a path forward, that's hard, I think, for everybody to deal with. Like, you know, some people do better with uncertainty than others. Mm-hmm. But I've just got to this point where, as I thought about this the past couple of weeks, I was finding a little almost joy in it, like joy in the struggle, joy in the fact that things are crazy. And at times it's stressful, yes, and a lot of driving around and like my car's full of crap and I'm moving stuff. Like it's just a lot of stuff that I would prefer not to be doing. But I've kind of accepted it. And I'm not obsessing about my routine. I'm not obsessing about like if I'm not working as much. In fact, I'm kind of taking it as a break to just like be a little bit more open with my schedule, give some more time to think, let my subconscious do his thing.
Right.
You know? So again, it's an obstacle. I'm trying to turn it into an opportunity. And I'm at least at the very least, which is I think what we're going to talk about today with these few slides, is I'm at least taking this inconvenience and the stress and these things that are happening, and I'm using it as a form of mental training.
Yeah.
Right. Resilience training.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't you read for me this first slide? Can you see that clear enough?
Yeah, absolutely. We appear to go through life reacting directly to events and all else in the world. That appearance is an illusion. We react to our judgments and opinions, to our thoughts about things, not to things themselves. We usually aren't aware of this. Events come to us through lenses of judgment that are so familiar we forget we have them on. Stoics seek to become conscious of those judgments, to find the irrationality in them, and to choose them more carefully.
What do you think about that?
I think it's great. I think that's something I've been trying to work on, is my reactionary, you know, like you said, when I'm in traffic or when it's in line with what I'm doing right now. I think it's something people need to be mindful of constantly. And a lot of people aren't.
Which part, what do they need to be mindful of?
The reactionary, their reactions to things and choosing to have, cause you have a choice ultimately in that.
Yes. That's the very important, that's the paramount. Mm-hmm. Actually, mm-hmm. Like a lot of people, somebody cuts you off in traffic, for example, You know, your primal response, right? Like, which is some, I mean, it's based in danger. It's based in fear. It's based in like inconvenience, like a lot of different things, right? It's not just purely like a rational, I'm going to be angry, but you have a gut response, you know, a primal response that's instantaneous. Mm-hmm. And most people believe that that's okay. Like mm-hmm. they almost say, well, I'm allowed to act this way because this person did that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then if you actually analyze that, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but this is such a, I mean, it's such a central theme though. We just got to hammer this home on because this is life-changing shit.
Yeah.
You always have a choice of how you respond. It doesn't matter what happens in your life, right? Like we talked about last week, it's always up to you and incumbent upon you. It's your responsibility to how you're going to respond to it, right? Even if somebody does something tragic and terrible to you and it's against the law and it's like so morally wrong, whose responsibility is it to deal with it?
It's you.
It's still yours, no matter what. It always comes down to you. Mm-hmm. So what he's saying here is events come to us through lenses of judgment that are so familiar, we forget we have them on. And what he's talking about is that conditioning where we get into routines and I mean, think about it. If you're driving for a whole month, right? And you only kind of have like 2 days of bad traffic or like 2 days where somebody like flips you the bird and cuts you off. Well, you have 28 days where it seems relatively normal. Mm-hmm. So you're conditioned to expect that so that when those once in every so often circumstances happen, it's just really hard to control yourself because like you don't have the training, you're not used to it. It kind of catches you off guard.
Yeah.
Right. And what he's saying is we have these lenses of judgment, which is a way we perceive things happening to us. We have to see that there's even a lens there.
Yeah.
You know, you have like those glasses where you can have like the thing, the color things flip up and down.
Yeah.
That's always kind of like what I try to envision.
Yeah.
And the metaphor is like that yellow or rose colored lens is something that is like down, but a lot of people don't realize they can just flip it up.
They forget it's right there.
You can just flip it up and then you see it differently. You don't see it through rose colored or yellow colored or whatever, like good or bad. You don't see it in any way. You just see it clearly, crystal clear.
It's clearly for what it is.
Right. So Stoics seek to become conscious of those judgments, meaning we want to become aware that we have a lens on. When we respond and it brings us angst or stress, we should actually be upset about the response. We shouldn't be actually, that's really good. That's what it is. We should be upset about our response to the thing, not the thing itself. If our response was not conducive to having mental calm, right? Because think about it. If we have a choice to respond, we're choosing to be angry or upset. We're choosing to suffer. We're choosing to live the precious time we have in a worse way. And we can just choose not to do that.
Yeah. And there is a big theme in people, you know, people are becoming more mindful of their mental health, their mental space, what have you, the peace. And I think a lot of people are having trouble, you know, a lot of people are trying to meditate now and a lot of people are having trouble because they see the thoughts in their, they observe the thoughts in their head. They get upset. They have emotional reactions to the thoughts in their head, the thoughts in their own head. Like, God, why did I think of that? Why did I? And it's a reactionary response to yourself. And it's so important to make sure, you know, in the same way when in being stoic and being stoic in life, to see it, just observe it. It is what it is. Like when you're meditating alone or when you're, you know, having that quiet time alone, you don't react to what's happening in your head. You observe it because you are just that. You're the observer. And if you go around life being that way, you're just going to be at peace. You're going to be, you know, and it's not going to be perfect, but it's just going to be better.
Yeah. I don't know if I would agree with the fact that people are trying to do more. I just think, I mean, I guess meditation is definitely trending. Mindfulness and the Calm app and like those things are definitely becoming more, there's more awareness of them. But at the same time, we have more people distracted than ever, more people not self-aware than ever, more people plugged into the matrix, just, you know, addicted to their screens than ever.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it's a response to that. I mean, we don't have data on this, so it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
I think though that what we can safely say is that more people are trying to find solutions because we're becoming more less aware and more connected in, distracted. And as a result, just not, we don't know who we are. We don't know what we want and the pulls us in the wrong directions. And like, there's 1,000,000,000,000 things in our environment that want our attention. So Yeah, I mean, it's a response to that. But again, that's why these ideas, like the Stoics had this stuff figured out 2,000 years ago. I mean, there's a reason that Stoicism and mindfulness and Buddhism and all these different things have kind of had a resurgence with the internet, because the internet has actually given us more distraction than ever. You know, like social media has created the comparison effect, and people, you know, suicide's on the rise, depression's on the rise, like kids are growing up staring at screens. Like there's a ton of things that are happening to which these things are coming as the potential solve to them, right? A potential solution. And for me,
especially with the growth of like data mining, and I was reading something the other day and how like Apple's trying to figure out something when it comes to privacy because of how good they're getting at pushing us only the things we want to see. So it's like the distractions are becoming they're becoming like, there's a science to distracting you now. You are the product, you know?
Right. Well, I was on a podcast recently. I was talking about this. So there's two ways to think about this, and then we'll get through this. And then we had Kumbhari join us. I hope I'm saying that right. Thanks for
Kumbhari. Yeah,
Kumbhari.
Yeah,
Kumbhari.
How's it going?
That's awesome.
Yeah, Kumbhari is a fitness and nutrition coach. Awesome, awesome.
Oh, that's great. Love to have you. That's love to have you here. That's great. And so you guys chatted last week a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's awesome. Absolutely awesome.
That's so cool. So what I was saying, and then, let me just go to that thought before I get sidetracked. Okay. So there's two industries right now. You have the big food industries, right? Processed food, which are basically new smoking companies, right? The smoking companies, you know, Mad Men, advertising, all that, that was a thing where they're like, how can we get people to smoke cigarettes? And celebrities, the cowboy, let's build a lifestyle, you know? And people eventually were like, oh, they're evil. They're just trying to get you to buy these products that kill you. Well, that's what the big food companies are doing today. Okay. Yeah. They have food scientists that literally work in labs all day to engineer food that short circuits your brain chemistry to become addicted.
Yeah.
And also it changes your palate and your perception of flavor so that when you like eat real food, you know, like it's a hard thing to overcome. And they spend billions on marketing, right? Just implant those things subconsciously. And then labels and designs and all these different things. And they hire some of the smartest people in the world to get you to see the food and want it. And then the actual scientists to engineer it, right? So that's one industry. Mm-hmm. A parallel industry is big tech. Where are the smartest people coming out of college in the world going to work, basically?
Immediately for them. Yeah.
Big tech. If you're anything related to tech, you're going to go get $200K a year, 300K. I mean, think about it. 22 years old, graduating from college, you're getting $300K a year, $200K a year. Like, I mean, how old are you now, Mondo?
24. That would be insane.
If I had that kind of money when I was 21, like,
I wouldn't know what to do.
I actually think it would be very detrimental to my life and my health and my personal development. It would have made, I mean, who knows what could have happened, right? And I think it's very true for a lot of people. I think, you know, even before 25, your frontal lobe's not fully developed. Giving young, basically kids, like adult children, that kind of, you know, ability to do whatever, like it's insanity, right?
Yeah.
But they're hiring these kids, smartest people in the world, and then they're bringing them into their company to build products that keep you as much on their platform, addicted to a screen and consuming, in a lot of cases, mindless content as much as possible. Absolutely. Billions in marketing, billions in development, and the smartest minds in the world. Like, does any of us think that we can overcome that? Like, that's why, like, if you're using any social media or any technology, like if you don't have an actual use strategy for it, like, for example, I got on Twitter recently. I have an entire strategy for it. I can block people if they mention politics. I mute certain words, like, et cetera, right? I used to think Twitter was evil. And I think for politics, it is. It's terrible, right?
Absolutely.
And I think censorship of big tech is terrible, but Twitter as a tool is actually very amazing. And there's a reason it's stuck around. It's because there's amazing people on there. There's amazing ideas. Like, I really love it for what I use it for. Instagram in a similar way. Instagram is a little bit more visually appealing, and I've really lost a lot of my kind of, I just don't appreciate Instagram as much anymore. And I think visually can be more addicting, right? Cause like when you're scrolling Twitter, you have mostly words. And you kind of have to be interested in the ideas, and you know, like it's just harder for words to kind of captivate you. Whereas like you can scroll, look at pictures all day long, you know, right?
It's a quick visual hit.
Well, yeah, we're very visual creatures. So two industries right there, multi-billion dollars, billions of dollars spent in marketing and product design, et cetera, to basically make millions of humans more unhappy and unhealthy. Mm-hmm. Like, think about that. Like, and there's not really outrage about it. Like, there's like a Netflix documentary here and there, whether it's about food, whether it's a social dilemma, like, and people just go on basically using the same things the same way over and over and over again. I mean, Snapchat just hit $100 billion valuation. And like, I used to think because I've never used Snapchat, and I thought it was probably going to die, but it's still going strong, keeping young kids doing whatever the hell they do on it.
And that's the funny part about Snapchat. They were able to keep that because it's mainly the young, like even younger than me, it's the 18
teenagers, right?
Yeah. Like it's the 13. I think I heard somewhere that was as young as 11 to about 20.
Yeah. And they're not even supposed to be on there. I think 13 is supposed to be the minimum limit, but those kids are getting on. They're like, and who knows what it's doing to their brains. Like that's some scary stuff.
We're not in that yet. We haven't seen what it does.
The trends are happening, but like what happens after 20 years, right? Like it's getting worse every year, but what after 20, like how bad is it going to be after 20? Is it going to like accelerate at year 10? Is it year 19 going to be like massive? Like, I don't know. It's pretty scary stuff. So let's go to this next slide. So this one was obviously about opinions, judgments. And then the very important points that we made that I think are worth iterating was everything is choice. You said that, right? Like respond is a choice. That's the most paramount thing that if, you know, we could all just remind ourselves of, it would help us bring awareness to it and kind of take back more control over our response. And then the one thing that I said that I kind of stumbled on was we should be more upset about our bad response to something than the thing itself. Right.
Absolutely.
So if you're going to get angry at something, get angry at yourself. And of course we don't need self-abuse and internal conflict isn't very productive, but there is a little bit of value in sometimes being impatient with yourself or like, you know, wanting
just
to
discipline.
Improve, right?
Yeah. Keeping yourself in line.
Right. And there's a balance to that. You can obviously go too far and you can abuse yourself. And like, I'm trying to in my own life, remove self-conflict, which Naval talks about that a lot. He's like, I'm just getting to this point where I don't want to ever be at conflict with myself. And I really like that, you know, anyways. So be more upset with your bad response to something than the thing itself. And then what's really cool, flip side of that is when you respond to something productively, right? So say somebody cuts you off in traffic and you like immediately, you know how those emotions kind of like come up.
Yep.
But you press it down, you step out of it. Now you're like fist pump. I just did that.
Yeah.
So think about that. A bad thing happened, right? Mm-hmm. You suppress a bad emotion and then you create a good emotion.
Yeah.
And then as I'm talking about this shit, it's just like nobody in school, college, high school, middle school.
No,
not a single teacher in my life ever even broached the subject of how to think or how to live. Like it's insanity to me. Every time we get on these calls and we're just talking about like these basic, I mean, this is basic philosophy, really. Like the Stoics really, really had it. Like it was a way of living. Like, and you know, some people hear philosophy and they think Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, and they are all a part of it. But a lot of the, you know, early philosophers that, especially that you study in school, it's more about like definitions and it's almost more of a historical recount. The Stoics were just like, bro, I want to live well, right? Like I want to be happy. And they were living in Roman times where like you can walk down the street and there's like sewage everywhere and you know, maybe you go hungry for a few days and like people starve to death. Like they were dealing with some pretty gnarly stuff, right?
Yeah.
So for me, Stoicism is like that foundational philosophy for just living a better life. And then you take actually the ancient Asian philosophies like Taoism, for example. And that's way more in the mind, you know, concepts like Wu Wei, action through inaction. So like, those are definitely more esoteric ideas, but they can still be translated to life. Same thing with Buddhism, right? Buddhism, which was basically an outcropping of one prince, Siddhartha, which was like, he just looked at society and he was a prince. And he's like, this is kind of ridiculous. And then he like tried to go down the path of like, what is suffering? And then he like kind of stumbled on meditation. And then he pursued nirvana, which is the state of like basically being completely in the now. And then Buddhism was kind of a religion that like created out of that, which is very strange to me. I'm really curious to see the origin of that, because they almost like turned Buddha into a god, but Buddha was just a dude who was like, this suffering thing is kind of weird and like you should meditate and that's how you fix it, right? So it's interesting. But you take like these bits and pieces of these very practical philosophies about how to live today. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, like Roman times, like we said, ancient Rome, ancient Greece, like no AC, right? You're either freezing or it's cold. Like for modern humans, like in Texas here, this happened a week ago. We thought the world was ending because we had to like bundle up a few times, right? Like, so it's like they had dealt with some, those things. And this is what they did to try to kind of respond well. But now think about it today. Modernity, modern society, modern living has created these other problems. Problems of the mind, problems of health, you know, too much abundance taken to excess will kill you, right? If you eat too much food, you'll die. If you don't eat any food, you'll die. If I drink like gallons and gallons of water, I can literally kill myself. And if I don't drink any, I'm absolutely going to die, right? If I lay in the sun like all day, every day, never have a break, it'll probably roast me alive. I'll die, right? But if I don't get any sun, I'll get rickets and I won't be able to walk, you know?
Yeah.
So Aristotle actually called this the golden mean, which is that Goldilocks effect where it's just like right in the middle. Right. You
perfect.
Have extreme, right in the middle. Yeah. So that was a little bit of a tangent. I think we should go to slide two before we're here all day.
Cause we could go on that forever when it comes to finding balance and not going to extremes. That's something I touched on last week too, was just, you know, just living a life of being content and making sure that, you know, it wasn't a life of extremes, you know?
Yeah, I think extremes in some ways, depending on what it is, at times, if it's on purpose, I think that's probably another general theme. So we were talking about, it's crazy that this isn't taught in schools. Like it still blows my mind, right? Which is why I'm with Better Human Program in schools. That's what my focus is to really empower people at a young age. And even in their young 20s and 30s, when you still don't know how to think, how to live, like how to respond to your environment and control it instead of just becoming a byproduct of whatever's around you. So that's huge. And then as so you said extremes, what popped in my head with that? Oh, the other thing is self-awareness. So for example, a lot of people take things to extreme, but they're not aware of why they're doing it and maybe what the repercussions are. And so they just do more and more. And you do more of anything, and you're going off the deep end basically. And if you do none of something, like if like astronauts, they have to, you know, they have to exercise like 4 hours a day.
Yeah. Because if not, they'll atrophy. Yeah.
Because their muscles will just poof, go away.
Gone.
Right. Yeah. So if that's not a perfect analogy for like the human animal and like how we need stress and we need things in our life to just stay alive. Right. The key is finding what's that perfect golden mean in the middle, as Aristotle said, you know?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to move my camera over here a little bit because I realized I was like looking at the side of the screen. Okay. So let's go to slide two. Why don't you read that for us? Maybe do a couple sentences at a time because it's kind of long, and then we'll talk about a couple sentences.
All right. We should stake our well-being on what we can control and let go of attachment to what we cannot. Honestly, do you want me to stop there? Because that's
If any sentence you read, you have comments on, go for it.
Yeah. I'll read it again. We should stake our well-being on what we can control and let go of attachment to what we cannot. So that was huge from just the year we've had, the, you know, what people are saying. That it was funny to go into 2021 and people were like, oh God, look at the year already. Look at it now.
What they were saying, people were complaining already. Cause
right. They were like, look how it started. We thought 2021 was going to be the year. And that was something that, you know, in my home, we understood, you know, which we were already having a tough time up to 2020, just financially and with so many things going on outwardly, that I understood, it got me to understand quickly that you can't control things outside of what you can control. You just like, there's what you can control and there's what you can't. And that it's pretty simple when it comes to that. It's just, you know, being conscious of what you can and can't control. And it was funny to think that we ended 2020 and people were like, all right, 2021's the year. It's like, what about 2020 did you think you could control? You know, what about?
It was also before 2020 to where people just didn't realize how lucky they and grateful they should be, right? Because the status quo, they got so comfortable with it and then it went away. But again, what do most people do? They default to complaining about something they can't control instead of seeing if maybe there's value there. Maybe I can learn, maybe I can grow, et cetera. Right.
Absolutely.
So 2021, it sounds like what you're saying, because I've seen different takes, like, but for the most part, things are still, I mean, they're relatively open. Some places are worse than others.
Yeah.
Still very political, you know, but I guess I lost my train of thought with that.
No, but truly, there's nothing about the year that makes it good or bad. It's about your control of what you do. What do you do?
Yeah.
Are you paying attention to what you can control? You know, in 2020, did you go, okay, everything shut down. I may have lost my job. I lost my job. I took it as a time to, okay, I'm going to sit with myself and be able to reevaluate. Now it's a reevaluation time. At this point, did I feel like I was going the right? I paid attention to the things I could control, you know, even going out to like buy groceries, you know, people controlling my emotions when it came to being around other people, because people were so, you know, it was like this weird, you know, all the animals were going wild at the watering hole, you know, everyone was on edge and you could just feel it. You can cut the tension in the air with a knife.
Still happens today. Yeah.
Totally, completely. And we're in Los Angeles. So, you know,
it's even worse.
It's still that way, dude.
Yeah.
So, insane. But yeah, that first, I mean, just that sentence, you know, I don't want to go too far down it, but I mean, it's absolutely, it's a core tenet in if you want to be happier, if you want to be more mindful and at peace. But I'll keep reading. So we generally can't control events or the opinions or behaviors of others or whatever else is outside ourselves. The Stoic thus considers money, fame, misfortunes, and the like to be externals and regards them with detachment. A Stoic still has preferences about those things and so would prefer to avoid adversity and would rather have wealth than not have it.
Right. Well, read the next sentence because that's important.
Okay. But attachment to those desires or fears is considered a guarantee of anxiety, and a form of enslavement to whoever controls the objects of them.
Hey, fellow human, quick break before we get back to the show. If you haven't already, please bookmark betterhuman.school or go check it out. I will tell you real quick that I had resistance to launching this and putting it out there and really, I mean, selling. It is selling. But the more I do it, the more I talk about it, the more natural it becomes. And because my mission is to build a million better humans, and I've so internalized that mission and I know what I can do and what I bring to the table and who I'm going to bring in to help me do that, I feel it my duty to shout this from the rooftops. So I'm going to keep going with this. I will be putting out 99% of my content for free, as always, so you can always follow along there. But if you're serious about getting a step-by-step core curriculum, plus getting to interact with me and others that are going through the program on a regular basis, getting the back-end community access, getting all the recorded calls, all the Q&A, then head over to betterhuman.school and get started today. The first 250 students are going to get lifetime access forever to everything. I hope to see you on the inside. Now back to the show. Yep. So what he's saying is the Stoics have a preference. Like if you can be wealthy, you should try to be wealthy. Right. Mm. But when your identity, your happiness, your like life purpose is about like how much money you have so that if one day you lose it all, like, I mean, think about it. People have committed suicide because the stock market crashed. Mm-hmm. Like in fact, every stock market crash that's happened, there have been a handful of suicides of people that have killed themselves because of how much money they've lost. Yeah. In some cases, people might've lost millions of dollars, but still had some money. Mm-hmm. Isn't that insane? Like if you actually think about it, like, okay, so you were up a lot, but now you're up only a little bit.
Yep.
And you're going to kill yourself.
Some of the guys who killed themselves, that couple million did nothing to their fortune.
What do you mean?
Like not in, it wasn't like that big loss. Some guys
were still wealthy is what you're saying.
Yeah, they were still wealthy.
Yes,
and
but
they killed themselves out of ridicule.
Well, I mean, maybe ridicule, but I think it's also some weird psychological thing in the mind where like we have a very hard time with like extremes. Like it's a psychological contrast that I think that like certain people just cannot, like we get so stuck into like, oh my gosh, we had this. And it's so much of a contrast that it becomes very, very hard to think outside that, right? And obviously obsessive behaviors to making money and doing things like that led you to get that in the first place and then not being aware of yourself probably increased your fragility in that way. So that those people that did commit suicide, again, their life became how much money they had or how much money they had earned, so that they felt like, well, I'd spent 20 years trying to, you know, make my few million dollars or my $10 million. And now I only have 1 million. It's not even worth it anymore. You know, even though like $1 million, if you just invest it wisely, you can live for the rest of your life on that. Like, it's insane. So this is very important. If we could prefer to have wealth, we want it. Right. 100%. Like, I have no qualms whatsoever about making money. I want to make as much money as possible. In fact, if you gave me $1 billion, I would build so much shit. I would do so many things. Like, it would just be amazing. And most of what I would spend my money on would not be me. Right. Like, or having stuff, you know? So I have no shame around making money at all. I literally don't have any shame, especially considering if you know what a free market is, and if you're making money through free market capitalism, the only way you become wealthy is because you're giving people what they want. Mm-hmm. So this is a very important point that is a little bit in the common vernacular SJW, like they're, you know, like blame the rich. That's a common theme, right? A lot of people like to demonize Jeff Bezos. Now, he's not a perfect creature, and he's done some things that I don't agree with and some whatever. But the only reason that he was able to take Amazon from zero to a I guess they were a $1 trillion company, or maybe they still are, is because he gave customers what they want. Right? Customers want things fast. They want huge selection and they want amazing service. If he doesn't give people what they want, if he doesn't give them value so that they give him money, Amazon wouldn't exist and he wouldn't have any money. Right? So explain to me what's evil about that. People want the things. He provides the value. You know, obviously he employs hundreds of thousands of people too, right? So he gives those people a job, right? They invest in things, they pay taxes, they do all these things. And it's like, you want to blame that person because he has a lot of money. Like, it's so bizarre to me. And I think a lot of it stems from people not understanding things like communism and socialism. They don't understand history. And it's not even worth going into any of that. But the free market, the truly free market, and I'm not talking about like crony politics or capitalism, because that does exist. You know, there's lobbying and there's ways you can make money nefariously. And there's ways you can make money by cheating people. And like, there are ways to do that where totally justified to blame people that do that. Like, sure. Right. But in a general open market, if you have people that are going to buy products, I mean, like even food companies, like we talk about, or smoking companies, I wouldn't necessarily say that they're necessarily evil. I think some things they have done to make more money could maybe be borderline evil, but unfortunately people buy the stupid products.
They buy into it.
They literally buy the products. Like,
absolutely. It's supply and demand.
Of course. Right. So, and it doesn't necessarily make them better health-wise, but it does solve some issue. So if you have nicotine addiction, you buy cigarettes because it solves that problem for you. If you like really tasty food that's not good for you, you go buy it, right? So it's like, we really should be more blaming the consumers that support those companies and the companies themselves in a weird, strange way, you know?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I'm trying to think so wealth, externals, right? So the point here is, when your identity and you wake up every day and you become addicted to like your results, or you become addicted to like maintaining things exactly the way they are, and you become resistant to change, that's where you run into problems, because that is basically you saying that at some point in the future, I'm going to suffer. Why do you think that's the case? Why at some point in the future, if I want to keep things the way they are, I want to keep winning or keep making money, why is that basically a contract with myself that in the future I'm going to suffer?
Because you've attached yourself to the current state of the way things are, or it could be that thing like your fortune, or you've attached yourself. You didn't remove yourself, where that big theme of detachment is mentioned like 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm. But why would that cause suffering?
Because you've made yourself those things. And if that state changes,
that's what I'm asking. That's the point. What is the only constant in the universe?
Change.
Yeah. Right. So, but black people don't understand that. So here's how we can break that down at the stardust level, as Carl Sagan would say. So the sun is basically dying.
Yeah.
It'll burn up in like 7 billion years or 3 billion or whatever it is. It'll just blow up. Right. Like, it's basically just flaming out. Right. Yep. And then everything around is gone. Okay. So you could even say that the earth is dying, decaying. Each one of us, every day we live, we're you know, declining or using up our time, right? Children tend to grow, but then you hit kind of like, you're not growing anymore. And then you go on the decline, you know, you age, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So the only constant is change, yet we have attached our mental equanimity, which is like the mental calmness, right? To things outside of ourselves that we cannot prevent from changing, right? So I heard recently in a podcast, there was this, one of the richest men in China, like he was worth like $200 million or something, or maybe actually he was probably a billionaire. I guess he was like some big industry mogul or whatever. He was on a trip vacationing on some scenic, like high up in the cliffs, mountains, whatever. And he goes to the edge to take a selfie and he falls over and he's dead. Right. And it's like,
it's that dude, laughing. Yeah.
Because no, I know, but it's like, it's like tragically, insane. It's tragically yeah. hilarious in a way almost. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Because I mean, one, like, dude, just strap something to yourself. Like I would have bodyguards tying ropes yeah. to me if I was going for a selfie like that. Yeah. Right. But he had $200 million and could have, you know, he could have had, I mean, unlimited protection physically, right? He could have like built a massive bubble that just like a house around him that just travels with him everywhere if he wanted to,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And he goes to the edge of a cliff and he just falls off. Like it's insanity, it's right? But I guarantee you that when he was falling down, he's like, I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Like all my money, all my yep. thing, all this, right? I did not see yep. that one coming. That one caught me yep. off guard. But let me tell you.
Absolutely. Right?
The problem is you don't get a redo in that chance.
No.
Right. And so Nassim Taleb talks about this a lot. He talks about how you want to mitigate. Well, actually Naval talks about a lot too, but Nassim calls it risk of ruin, right? Which is actually a gambler's term. Risk of ruin is where you take your whole bankroll and let's say you're playing in a high stakes game where you can lose all your money. So that you're actually out of the game if you lose all your money.
Okay.
Right. So that means that, like, you know, there's like bankroll theory and whatever. If you're playing poker, you want to have like 100 buy-ins, right?
Right.
Because then it's not likely you're going to lose all your money. Because right. if you lose all your money, you can't play anymore. Right. So if yeah. you have a bad losing session, then you're out. Right. So risk of ruin for life, right, is going to be things that threaten your physical safety.
Absolutely.
Right. So that's why Naval says, like, be very, very, very weary and careful with anything that can basically kill you.
Yeah.
Right. And there was, I think, another one he said, but, and then be very, very, very risk-taking with things that can't kill you. So like money, things you create, like those career. Things you can always get more of, like, mm-hmm. You know, your time, be very, very critical yeah. of how you spend your time.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because you never get that back, but money yeah. you can always get back.
Correct.
You know, and putting yourself out there, whatever. He also says like reputation, be careful with your reputation because that's very hard to rebuild. A lot of people can never rebuild it. Right. So like Warren Buffett talks about that. He's like, he's got this quote where it takes like, you know, years and years and years to build your reputation, but then one day to ruin it, you know, and it's just gone forever. Right. So we have to kind of think about risk and things we do and how we, you know, what we get attached to, what we think yeah. about, whatever. We have to keep that, you know, front and center of the mind. Let's actually just finish this slide and then sure. we'll do a summary wrap up because we've actually covered a lot of ideas and I want to kind of summarize them and then we'll tap out.
Okay. In sum, it is against Stoic policy to worry about things that you can't control. What we can control and should care about are our own judgments and actions. To put these first two points together, we get attached to things beyond our control, and this brings us misery.
Yep, because things change, right? We talked about things change, completely. So you were guaranteed to be miserable at some point.
Absolutely. And we are oblivious to features of our thinking that we can control and that, if managed better, would bring us peace. Stoicism tries to make us conscious of this pattern and reverse it.
Yep. So,
yeah.
Awareness, what's in our control, which really requires its own show. I mean, because a lot of people don't get what is actually in your control. Like they think that they can control a lot of things they can't. So like somebody talks bad about you, you're like, I'm going to go confront them. I'm going to change their mind. Like I'm going to make them like me. Like that's just such nonsense, right?
No way.
You know, like if you invest in a business or something and then you're like, it's not working, but you keep trying harder. You keep throwing more money at it. It's like, It's just you not accepting what you can't control. Maybe you should move on. Maybe you should like listen to what's actually happening. Okay. And then, so we talked about on the first slide, I'm gonna go back to it real quick. We appear to go through life, reacting directly to events. So this is about awareness of how we respond. And the two things we talked about, your insight was, do you remember?
Yeah, essentially we need to look at and observe your reactions to things and not necessarily go get so caught up in the reaction.
And
to
the
it.
The one thing that everyone has that they don't realize they have is.
Yeah. I don't remember now. Choice. Yeah.
Choice of how you respond.
The main theme. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So choice of how you respond is paramount. Yeah. You have choice. Okay. And then two is you should be, when you don't respond well, be upset about how you didn't respond well. And then when you respond well, you actually take a bad thing or an inconvenience and then you get joy out of it because now you're happy that you responded well.
Absolutely.
Right. So those two things, huge. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good amount of stuff here. We went 45 minutes, a bit longer. We had a few people pop in and I'm still pretty tired. So I think we still did a good job.
Yeah.
And this one will get posted next week. Perfect. For everyone. If anyone wants to follow you on the socials, where can they find you?
Armando Rivera Comedy on Instagram. And that's really it right now.
Okay. And then this is sponsored by the Better Human School, Better Mind Program, Mindset Training. You can learn more at betterhuman.school. We cover everything mindset. We're going to help you think better, live better, take better actions. And then really, I mean, Armando, what benefits would bring your life if you were thinking better and acting better?
Everything. Better choice, health, mental health, physical health, just general wealth. Yeah. If your goal is to be wealthy, that will help you. You touched on it in the beginning too, where you were like, you know, you shouldn't wrap up yourself in those physical things. It should be, what is your goal, and work backwards from it, mm-hmm. you know, and thinking better and you ultimately feel better and you're able to then take action.
Everything is, if you think better, everything is better.
Absolutely.
Like everything. Like
everything.
It's
everything.
It's, yeah, it's actually.
That's where you have people who live on two opposite extremes. You have people in, you can have people in extreme poverty around the world and people in extreme abundance. And those people can ultimately have the same level of happiness.
Of course. Or misery.
Or misery. Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
But have the same level based on their mental state and how they think.
Yes. It's all choice.
Yeah.
Right. And you get choice by becoming aware.
Absolutely.
Right. And then when you become aware that you have choice, absolutely. Then you become, then you focus your awareness on what you can control, which is always absolutely. your response and your actions. And then you have true locus of control over your destiny and you can do anything and be anything. And it's amazing. So get on the Better Human Newsletter every Saturday over at colin.coach. That's colin.coach. And I hope to see you next week. Every Wednesday we'll be doing this, 2 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Eastern. Armando, thanks for hanging out. And we'll see you all in the next one.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, fellow human, Colin here. If you've been following me for any time now, you know that I've gone through a little bit of a transformation. I've been spending most of my time early on focused on helping people get better in their health, make better food decisions, lifestyle decisions, get outside, take walks, all that stuff. And that's led me to where I am today, where I've committed the second part of my life to help build better humans. Now, the first iteration of how I'm going to do that is a Better Human School, which I've been thinking about and really collectively putting the ideas together for the last 15 years of my life, basically my entire adult life, the things that I've learned, the big ideas that have served me time and time again, the things I've learned from loss, from struggle, from being sued, from just every possible thing that you can imagine happening and coming out a better, more resilient person. And I want to pass that along to other people to save them time, money, and a lot of suffering. That's going to make the world a better place. And each person that can get to that place and make better decisions and become the best version of themselves, the more they're going to lead by example. And we're going to have a ripple effect to other people and eventually, hopefully, to the masses. Because right now it's estimated that about 10% of Americans are considered metabolically healthy. 10%. And the reason I stopped spending so much time trying to get people to eat healthy and walk and get outside and do things that they know they need to do is because, again, most people know they need to do it, but they aren't doing it. Why is that? What are the limiting beliefs, the thought patterns, and the environmental factors that are keeping them from mastering their thoughts and thus mastering their life, their health, etc.? So if I can help people figure out how to master their life, how to take control of their thoughts, how to unlearn the really bad thought patterns that have been implanted in their minds through society and
and friends and family and their upbringing, then I can actually help people live better lives, become happier. And then they'll get the health part because they'll see the connection between better health, better living, and they will take it upon themselves to do it. They will get it done. And that's the power of controlling your thoughts, your emotions, and taking control of the moment and how you think, and not just letting it run rampant or just responding to everything around you and just being a pinball in the game of life. So if you want to learn more about this, we have a pre-launch special. The first 250 students are going to get lifetime access to everything. I have big plans. You can watch the video there to learn about that and all the different things that we're going to do. But the core curriculum, you're going to get lifetime access to, as well as the Zoom calls every week, the Q&A, the membership back end, and all the bonus stuff that I'm going to be adding on a regular ongoing basis as I bring experts in and we cover different topics from finances to living to health, just everything that is going to be in addition to the core curriculum. The core curriculum, though, is the foundations, the biggest first principles that you need on a daily basis. That's what you want to build your life around. Then you have the How to Think section, the How to Think 101, which are going to give you the biggest ideas of humanity that we've uncovered from philosophy and psychology. Then you're going to have the How to Live section, which are big ideas, again, from philosophy and the best books ever written and how to be successful as a modern human, a little bit of the current with the old combined together to make you a better human by giving you the ability and the tools to change the way you think to get the outcomes you want. Anything that you want in your life is going to come through your brain, your thoughts. If you take control of that, you can get there. If you don't take control of that, well, it's just pure randomness as to whether you're going to build the life that you truly appreciate and that you truly want. If you don't know where you're going, you might end up somewhere else, as Yogi Berra said. I want to help you figure out where you want to go and then give you the tools that'll get you there. So if you want to learn more or get started today, which I highly recommend you do, head over to betterhuman.school. That's betterhuman.school. And you can learn more. And if you have any questions or comments, you can always reply to this email or drop a comment or DM. You can find me. It's the internet. That's the world we live in now. And I'll be happy to chat with you, maybe even hop on a call if you're so inclined. And wherever you're at in life, wherever you're paying attention, I appreciate you following along. I hope you'll take some action with something that you learn through this program or through the 99% of the free content that I put out on a regular basis that I will continue to put out. And as always, I'll see you in the next one.
Please always remember that the members of the podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.